Mountcastle chops it right back to Smith. He spears it, steps and throws to first in time, and that's the ball game. Will Smith earns his first save as a Royal, and the Royals beat the Baltimore Orioles 4-1.
And welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast-friendly auto repair as the Royals win over the Baltimore Orioles yesterday by a final score of 4-1. Royals score 3 in the second. That was enough for Alec Marsh, who went 7 innings, gave up just one run on 2 hits with 5 strikeouts. And Mikel Garcia had a big game with a couple of hits. Nick Lofton with a couple of hits. And the Royals now 2-3. Baltimore falls at 3-2. Matt Cotrero, manager of the Royals, on his starting pitcher.
It was outstanding. I mean, that's adverse conditions to pitch in against a really good lineup, and he did nothing but attack right from the get-go. They hit some balls hard that we were fortunate enough to be in the right spot and made some nice plays, but overall, I mean, I think he set the tone. What he built up in September last year and then coming into spring training, he's been on a mission, you know, and that's one game. You know, we don't want to proclaim anything to be a finished product or whatever. He's a very young pitcher in his big league career, but there's a lot of upside there, and we're really excited about it.
It was a cold and rainy night, but sometimes that's advantage for the pitchers and it's harder for the hitters, but maybe the grip can be a problem for a pitcher as well. And the Royals and the Orioles will play again today at 12:05 to complete their 3-game series. Cole Reagan's on the hill for the Royals against Corbin Burns. And last night, Philadelphia Phillies slugger Bryce Harper had no hits so far during the year. Last night, turned that around, 3 home runs in one game. Second time he's done that in his career. Local sports Dusty.
Yeah, there's not a lot going on. Then all of a sudden yesterday, boom, we get hit with everything going on. There's a lot of activity yesterday in the area in spring sports, and a lot of teams that finally were able to get their season started, whether it be track and field or golf. Softball, Beloit had already started, and they are now 4-0 in the season. They picked up wins over Minneapolis 9-7 in game one, and then won the second game 20-5 in 5 innings. Again, Beloit 4-0 to start the year. Beloit baseball team moved to 3-1 to start the season as they picked up a sweep and a doubleheader there in the NCAA at Minneapolis, winning game one 22-2 in 5 innings, taking the second game 25-0 in 3 innings. So again, that was the baseball team yesterday for Beloit. Track and field yesterday, the Clay Center Invitational, Beloit was at the event, and on the girls' side, they took first place as a team by 100 points. It's an unlimited entry, so a lot of athletes got a chance to participate. Beloit took first with 213 points ahead of Clay Center and second with 113. Individual gold medal winners for Beloit: Ashlyn Knight in the 100-meter dash, Dakota Gray in the 100-meter hurdles, Kat Gray in the 800-meter run. Also in the shot put and discus, Samantha Thompson finishing in first place. Autumn Lorenz of Beloit winning the javelin gold. Ashlyn Loomis the pole vault. Miley Brown the long jump. Brecken Boudreaux the triple jump for the Lady Trojans. On the boys' side, Beloit finished in third place as a team, and gold medal winners were Mason Thompson in the 16 and 3,200-meter runs, Brody Litton in the shot put, Brooks Jones in the javelin, and Brody Boudreaux in the discus, taking first place there yesterday. So that's Clay Center Invitational. St. John's Invitational was held there in Beloit yesterday. The Osmond girls took first place as a team. Area athletes winning gold medals: Bentley Smith of Lincoln in the 100-meter dash, also in the 200-meter dash, Bethany Simulink of Rock Hills, Cody Hill of Sylvan Lucas in the 400, Linnell Gingler of St. John's in the 800, Ryan Berticelli of Osmond winning both the 16 and 3,200-meter runs. 4x400-meter relay went to St. John's. Osmond winning the 4x8. And in the field events, Jennifer Cochran of Thunder Ridge in first. Hazel Metz of Lincoln won the long jump. J.C. Remus from Lakeside the triple jump. Shot put went to Grace William of Osborne. Gianna Herenick of St. John's won the discus. And in the javelin, Gracie Reiner of Osborne finishing in first place. Boys team-wise, Osborne was the top team from the area, finishing in second place. Individual gold medals for Mason Baker of Thunder Ridge in the 400. Johnny Hamill of Osborne in the 3,200. Nathan Goheen of Osborne in the 110-meter hurdles. Sam Kindig won the 300-meter hurdles for Osborne. Rock Hill's 4x1 team in first place. 4x4 and 4x8 for Osmond in first place. Also in the high jump, Xavier Miller of Lincoln took first. Long jump, Nate Myers of Rock Hills. Triple jump, Jeremiah Miller of Lincoln. And in the shot put, Easton Good of Lincoln taking first place there yesterday in Beloit. And rounding out the area events from yesterday, high school golf. The Smith Center Invitational took place in Phillipsburg. Team-wise, Phillipsburg took first place. Beloit was in third. Best team as far as our area was concerned, as far as highest finish there, team-wise. And then individual, Hunter Sisson from Phillipsburg took first place, shooting an 80 on the day. And Jace Cunningham of Lakeside was in fourth, shooting an 84 as well. And Dawson Lance of Osborne finished in fifth place with an 87. So, again, a lot of activity yesterday. You can find all the results for all of these events. You can go through and find them all there at nckssports.com as far as the local events from yesterday were concerned. I do have one other local note to pass along, and it seems like this it happened a lot during the indoor track and field season, and it's already happened during the outdoor track and field season. Brady Pollen, the Beloit native and St. John's grad, has racked up another American Athletic Conference Athlete of the Week honor as he's competing in the high jump for Wichita State at the Shocker Spring Invitational. He jumped 2.17 meters or 7 1/2 inches, and that was the ninth best mark in the nation at the moment, and he leads the American Athletic Conference by 6 centimeters. So Brady Pollen, again, the AAC Outdoor Athlete of the Week in the field for Wichita State. You can read more about Brady at GoShockers.com and all the accolades that he's already racked up here in the spring outdoor season for Wichita State.
He's had a decent start to his spring track and field season. Yes. Not bad. Congratulations to Brady. Still have no idea where he got his athletic ability, but God blessed him with that. That's for sure. I don't see BP, his dad. Honestly, I don't know. 7 feet, 1 1/2 inches. I don't know if dad can jump 1 1/2 inches. I think his son can cover the 7 feet, but I don't think dad could even. It's kind of like, you know, me and this guy combined to score 63 points. I had two, and the other guy had 61. I don't even think BP can pull the two.
No. I want to see video. He posted a video of the K-State guy that Brady was competing against. Mm-hmm. Did you see that at all? Uh-huh. Like, he scissor high jumped. Like, he uh-huh. jumped just uh-huh. straight up scissor legged, uh-huh. 6'5", I think is what it was. And he's like the defending champion of something. And he actually jumped the same as Brady, but he did it quicker. So I think he just ducked out of the rest of the meet and just took his first place finish and moved on. But it was, he was like, it was wild to see this guy just scissor 6'5". Like, I was like, when he says scissor, does he mean? And then then I saw the video, and I'm like, oh, that's what he means.
6'5".
Yeah, 6'5".
Not 6.5 inches.
No.
I can't scissor 6.5 inches.
No.
I don't even know if I can jump 6.5 inches.
I can jump straight up. I can't get my feet off the ground if I'm doing that.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, some interesting news coming out of Lawrence yesterday on two different fronts, and it's all good news for once. KU junior KJ Adams announcing yesterday he's going to return for his senior season. Averaged 12.5 points, 4.5 rebounds his junior year, played in all 34 games, started all but two of those. Also last night, Bill Self got a commitment from Lawrence native and South Dakota State transfer Zeke Mayo. Mayo was a Summit League Player of the Year this past season, averaging 19 points, 6 rebounds, while shooting 47% from the floor, 39% from beyond the arc. Of course, they recently picked up the transfer guard from Florida, Riley Hugel. So KU's definitely got two guys that can shoot. What did Brian Haney tell us last Thursday on recruiting and the portal? Shooters, and more shooters. Well, they've got two, and they also got two guys that can handle the ball. And then that takes a little pressure off DeJuan Harris. And then you got KJ Adams coming back, and they got a highly touted big man coming in that's super athletic. And then they got Hunter Dickinson that it sounds like, although it's not official, that he'll be back. You got Amelko Jackson. Hey, Amelko Jackson's a nice piece if he's the seventh or eighth guy.
Yeah.
Or maybe ninth. So, and Kansas isn't done yet, but this is a tremendous jump start. Just like that, they've got two legitimate guards. I mean, the Kugel kid from Florida was all SEC freshman team his freshman year, dipped down a little bit this year, but not like he fell off the face of the earth. And then Zeke Mayo was the Summit Player of the Year, and we have seen guys. Dalton Connect was at Northern Colorado, ladies and gentlemen, and he put up 37 Elite Eight against Purdue on a big-time stage and almost single-handedly had Tennessee in the Final Four. Last year, he played at Northern Colorado. Because, see, people get caught up in this, and this is what my oldest son did, and he was right on this one, actually. But this is the danger. When I told him, well, KU's got some shooting, Nicholas Timberlake's coming in, he goes, he's from Towson. That's not going to translate. I said, listen, Frank Mason, Devontae Graham were from Appalachian State in Towson. I mean, there's a lot of guys that go from a small school that do pretty well at a big school. But he was right. Nicholas Timberlake didn't really translate. Yeah. We get that. But Did Grant Nelson for Alabama, they're in the Final Four. He's from South. He's a transfer from either North Dakota. I think he's from transfer from North Dakota. He wasn't playing D1 ball last year. He's a big part of what Alabama's done. Dalton Knecht was playing at Northern Colorado last year. Now he was runner-up to Zach Edey for National Player of the Year, more than likely. He had 37 the other day. He's been averaging over 20 this season. He's a stud, and he's going to be a first-round NBA draft pick, possibly. He can post up. He can shoot outside. He was at Northern Colorado last year. And now Zeke Mayo, you may say, well, he's a Summit League Player of the Year. Whoop-dee, freaking la-dee-da. Hey, Tyler Perry was at North Texas, and he did just fine at K-State this year. It's a smaller conference in Division One. Yeah, but if you can play, you can play.
Marquise Noel came from Little Rock.
Yes, there's another one.
You know?
Dean Wade came from a small town, small classification school, and he's in the NBA now and doing fine. So when you immediately write off people just because where they came from, that's a mistake. Now, you might be right sometimes, but in this case, it is interesting to me. He's a Lawrence native. Well, why wasn't he at KU to start with? Because he wasn't good enough.
Exactly.
Kansas didn't think you highly enough of him to give him a full-ride scholarship to play at Kansas. He wasn't on the radar. But what he did was he went and he proved himself, and now he's good enough for Kansas. Now, what would be really funny if you really were vindictive and you knew you had a lot of offers, which Zeke Mayo does have a lot of offers. Okay, he could have easily said, he could have gave the bird to Kansas and said, I wasn't good enough for you last year or 2 years ago when I came out of high school. You're a loss. He could be that way.
If
he wanted to. But he grew up as a KU fan. This is his dream and so forth. He showed pictures after he was committed when he was little and at camps and so forth. So this is a dream come true for Zeke Mayo to play for Bill Self in Kansas. But he wasn't good enough a few years ago. But now he is.
Yeah. You know, I was talking yesterday while you were gone about the Jayhawk Conference because Hutch won the championship. And so what it used to be was you would come out of high school and Kansas didn't want you.
Right.
You would go to
junior college,
Butler. You would go to Hutch. You'd go to Barton. You'd go to Colby, wherever you go. You know, I'm just using Jayhawk Conference because those are the ones in Kansas.
Yeah.
And you'd go to those schools. And then you would do a year, maybe 2 years, transfer to the Division I school that you're hoping to get the opportunity with before, whether you didn't qualify or you just wanted to put some better things on film for them and some better scout for them to look at to be part of that team. Now there's, with the transfer portal, it's a whole different game.
It is.
You can go to South Dakota State. You can go to Towson. You can go to Little Rock. And you can still get scouted and put something together. And after even just 1 year there, it could end up at Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, Indiana. And I'm just throwing names out. USC. Anywhere you want to go if you've got what they want from you as part of their team. And it's just that's the different part of the game now because you couldn't do that before because you couldn't just leave a Division I program and go wherever you wanted. Nope. You had to do JUCO first.
And then try to work your way
back. Because you're not in the NCAA.
Yeah.
And you're not going to ruin a year of eligibility there.
That's right.
Now you can. And so that's, I think, obviously that's going to change a little bit of how JUCO works too with the way they recruit. And there might be more opportunities for even smaller Kansas kids at JUCOs because of that. But at the same time, there's just so many other opportunities for you as a player and also the team as a program to go find people and fix a team in 1 year and not have to wait on it.
It is a completely different landscape. And the best, those that are going to succeed are the ones that adapt the quickest and are the most proactive.
Yeah.
And those that are stuck in their ways and fall behind are going to struggle.
Yeah, if you're only out there recruiting junior colleges like you used to.
Look at NC State. They're full of transfer portal guys.
Yeah.
And they hit a home run. They're in the Final Four. Now, granted, they struggled for a while and were on the bubble and then had a great run. Alabama, they got rid of three. They had three new coaches and changed over a majority of their roster and hit the portal as well. And they're in the Final Four.
Yeah.
You've got to hit the portal. And you've got to hit it hard. And you've got to get good talent in the portal.
Yeah.
And you can't wait for high school kids to develop. I mean, you can, but you got to have guys in the portal. And see, this is the thing that sucks for high school seniors that are really good. You know, the COVID year obviously hurt getting extra year of eligibility at all sports at every level. And eventually, I think the next year is going to eliminate, finally be done with all that. But you still, the landscape is different now. And I've said this before. If you're going to hire somebody in the real world, okay, if for instance, if I want to hire a new sports director, or news director, or whatever it may be, okay, and I've got somebody that's out of college that seems to be a good candidate, but they don't have experience, and I've got somebody that has been doing this for 2 or 3 years, and they're really good at it, who am I more than likely going to hire?
Yeah, it's been doing it
unless,
for 2 or 3
unless
years.
I don't want to pay that person what they're worth and pay cheaper for some kind of college, I'm going to go with the more experienced one, and maybe I can still hire both. But that's what you're going to do in real life. I've experienced it. I went through it coming out of college. I was passed over for certain things because, well, you don't have experience. Well, how the hell am I going to get experience?
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't give me a chance to have experience. But, you know, now that where I am today, I understand that side of things.
Sure.
That's no different than, you know, Kansas, instead of going after a high school senior that they normally would have been in past years in a different landscape, as you mentioned, in college sports. He now goes, let's get Riley Kugel, let's go get Zeke Mayo, let's go get Hunter Dickinson, Nicholas Timberlake, and let's get him right away, instead of let's develop and get the next Grady Dick. Now, they still want high school All-Americans, and Kansas still will, and the bigger kid, I forgot his name, that's coming in is very athletic. He's a McDonald's All-American, and they really like him. But that kid may take longer to develop. So you already have somebody that's established, that's played D1 basketball, who was a conference player of the year in Zeke Mayo. You got another kid that played in the SEC against some of the best competition in the country. Hello, you're going to hit the portal. If you're smart and you want to be good, or you want to get improved right away, or if you're a new coach coming in, new or old, you got to hit the portal first. Hit the portal hard. And you might go hard after the top, you know, 15, 20 high school seniors in America. Okay, you still probably go hard after those guys. But for a lot of schools, those kids aren't on their radar because they can't afford them or whatever it may be. So now they go, you know what? We're better off trying to hit the middle part of the portal. We might not get Hunter Dickinson, but I can go get Tyler Perry, okay, like K-State did. Or I can go get this guy. And so we are seeing teams that are benefiting by doing well in the portal. And maybe they got a little bit lucky. This guy wasn't. Nicholas Timberlake was the top shooting guard in the portal. There was another kid that's at Connecticut that's having a big year. And he was actually lower on the list than Nicholas Timberlake. And you sit here as a KU fan and go, why didn't we get that guy instead of Nicholas Timberlake?
Mm-hmm.
UConn was going after Nicholas Timberlake too.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get a little bit lucky, perhaps, or maybe it's the fit. But just because they're coming from a mid-major or even a D2 possibly, or whatever the case may be, but usually a mid-major or smaller D1 school, you see Northern Colorado with Dalton Connect, which they used to be D2. They're now D1, I believe.
Yeah, they are.
Dalton Connect is one. Grant Foster or Grant Nelson, as I mentioned, for Alabama. There's a lot of examples. And now Kansas is, I mean, Kansas only eliminated here very recently, and they've already locked up two guys in the portal, two guards that can shoot. I mean, who knows what else Bill Self's going to do. So when we said Bill Self's going to correct this, and Bill Self said, you won't have this again, he wasn't lying.
No.
And I knew he wasn't.
I don't think anybody thought he was.
Yeah, and now he gets KJ Adams to come back, whether he's going to start or not start next year. According to Brian Haney, it sounds like there's a chance he might not start. And we were saying, well, is KJ going to stick around if he's not going to be a starter? But I would guess he'd still be a starter at least for a while and then see what happens. But and I do think we got to be careful here, because last offseason, what were Kansas fans doing? Ooh, we got Dickinson. Oh my gosh, we got the top shooting guard in the transfer portal in Timberlake, and then we got this Furphy kid, and we got Marcus Adams, who is a highly touted recruit, and then we got Arterio Morris as a transfer. And what happened? Arterio Morris was dismissed from the team. You didn't forecast that he was going to be charged with rape. Mm-hmm. Nicholas Timberlake did not turn out to be the player he was. Oh, we got Marco Jackson, McDonald's All-American. He wasn't quite ready, and that happens a lot, high school kids to the college level. And you start going through, oh, Dickinson was a really good player, but maybe not as good as I thought he was going to be, or he struggled from the foul line, or he started to miss three-pointers. And part of that was, okay, you couldn't make threes, so they packed it in on him and forced him out sometimes. So you go through all these scenarios, and then Marcus Adams transferred, and dumped out of his agreement. And he's in the portal again, by the way. Did you know that? Marcus Adams is trying to set the record for being in the portal more times than anybody humanly has ever done. So that kid needs to make up his mind and pick something and move on and at least stay somewhere. And the other thing that Fran Franchella made a really good point he threw on Twitter in a very short little comment, and you and I have talked about this before as well. People assume, we in society, we assume way too much. we assume way too much. If you assume that that person that's coming kind of fast is going to hit the brakes and stop at the stop sign instead of cross the intersection running into you, you might be in for a rude awakening. You have to be observant. You got to pay attention. Don't assume that person who's texting on their phone while they're coming to a stop sign going full speed is going to stop. You need to assume that they might fly through the intersection. Not necessarily assume. You've got to be ready. Anticipate whatever the case may be. You can't assume they're going to obey the law and not run through a stop sign. So we get caught up in assuming. So what a lot of people do, and it is the easy thing to do, is when a kid enters the transfer portal, they immediately say, why is that kid leaving? He would have been next up next year on this team. He would have got to play more. Or why is this kid leaving? Because he was a starter, and so forth and so on. You automatically assume. Many people out there, and I'm sure many of you listening right now, many of you assume, and I think I thought the same thing there for a while when I was younger, you immediately just assume that the kid chose to leave. We've told before on this show,
yeah,
and Fran VanSchillen put it out there as plain as day and bluntly. Remember that a lot of these kids going to the portal were fired. What does that mean? It means, let's just give an example. If there's a kid, I don't care what example, Jarrell Colbert, he's the latest for K-State. He's in the transfer portal. Well, Colbert, he might play even more next year, Jerome Tang. Why would he leave? Why would he leave? Perhaps Jerome Tang said, you're not a part of our future. We got another kid we want to take your spot. He thinks he can improve the roster, and he encourages Jarrell Colbert to look elsewhere. Okay, that's kind of how it works. Or yeah, you say, listen, we're not going to probably have a scholarship for you, so you might want to enter the portal. Well, we don't, you know, no offense to you, but you're not quite ready for this level, so you might want to go ahead and enter the portal. And that frees up a scholarship. It frees up a spot. So when people say, well, all these kids, well, this kid would be, he'd get a chance to play or compete for minutes next year. What you don't know is the coaches at these universities have said, we think we can upgrade that position. And we encourage you to leave, or we'll just tell you, you're not part of our plans in the future. It's rough, but it is a business.
Yeah.
Coaches are in to win. If they don't win, they get fired. It impacts their families, their livelihoods. So you are putting together the best roster you can, just like you do in the NBA. What do? If a guy isn't performing, what do? You cut him, you release him, you trade him, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you do now is, you know what? You're not part of the future at Kansas State. You're not part of the future at Nebraska, Oklahoma, or Kansas. Well, you know, we liked you a lot. You came in and you just didn't measure up. So let's go ahead and agree to part ways. And you might love to be a Jayhawk, but we're not going to keep a scholarship for you. So we would suggest that you go elsewhere. And that's basically, you're fired.
I guarantee you that's happening a lot more in football than it is in basketball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all these guys that were leaving K-State and everybody panicking, and then you look at how many people left LSU or however many people left everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know that all those guys are not just leaving on their own volition. Like, there's like, we could upgrade at this receiver spot. I'm Chris Klieman, right? Like, maybe you should probably go somewhere else. We didn't get what we thought we were going to get out of you. You're probably not going to play next year, or just it might be just bluntly saying, hey, you're not going to make our team, so you probably should enter the portal.
Right. Exactly.
And it was like, some of it might be walking a fine line and actually telling them, getting them to agree to it. Mm-hmm. And some of it might just be, see you later.
That's right.
And I think there was a couple times under Frank Martin at K-State that it was, see you later.
Yeah. And I think there are.
This is even before the portal was a thing, right?
I think there are some situations, too, where it depends on the coach. But I think some coaches would say, listen, we don't want to hold you hostage here. There's a chance that you'd have a spot on this team, but we're going to look into other areas. So we encourage you to enter the portal. But you could still come back.
Yeah, exactly.
And that happens from time to time. It's interesting. And we'll talk more about the portal coming up in about 30 seconds or so, as we'll have K-State in focus. Another K-State men's basketball player is entering the portal. Another has chosen a new home. We'll update you on K-State baseball, plus an interesting story about a former Beloit basketball coach. And the Chiefs have agreed to bring back a player that was a free agent. And what are the Chiefs and Royals going to do now that the voters said, to hell with your tax initiative?
I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Hot weather is here. Is the air conditioning in your vehicle nice and cold? If not, we can help. We have the training and equipment to service vehicle AC systems of all types, including the new refrigerant and late model vehicles. We offer same-day service on air conditioning with no appointment necessary. So don't sweat it out. Give us a shout. Fast, friendly service for your air conditioner can be found at Kiefer Brothers Automotive, just south of the courthouse in Beloit, or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, we're talking about the transfer portal. K-State has had three players on the men's basketball team, unless I've missed anybody here in the last few days. Cam Carter has chosen to go to LSU, go back home to Louisiana. He averaged 14 points a game, a starter all throughout the season for K-State, so he leaves, and he's found a new home. Also, Dorian Finister, he didn't play much this year. He is entering the portal, and I would guess he's one of those guys that you might have said, you know, head on out.
For sure, yeah.
And then Drell Colbert, I don't know. I think that one kind of could kind of be, you know what, we're looking to upgrade, but, you know, that could might be in the middle of the road, perhaps, but K-State redshirt junior Jarrell Colbert plans to enter the transfer portal, and he played for K-State for two seasons. He wasn't a star. You know, he did some dirty work for the team, but he was not something that you go, wow, we got to keep him, and no. So he's entered the portal. So K-State now with three guys entering the portal, one's already found a new home. Any thoughts on those three guys?
No, I mean, Cam's the only one that's like you sure. probably would have liked to have back if he would have wanted to be back, or if the staff wanted him to stay and things like that. You know, Colbert would have been second on the list as far as how I'm ranking them of who I would have wanted to stay. Finister just really didn't develop into much over the last couple of years. That's not saying he couldn't have or he can't wherever else he goes. But, you know, I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over any of them, to be honest with you. But I would have liked to have Cam Carter back. There's no question. But, you know, I think Cam Carter has a certain role that fits him best. And if he's required to take on, like, you know, be like a leader and kind of like a point guard type, that's not his style at all. Turn the ball over quite a bit. So, as did everybody on the team. But
yes,
there's areas where you got to fix that part of it. So go out and find other people that can do that. But the three guys that are leaving, yeah, Cam's pretty much the only one that I'm overly concerned about, or not concerned, but would have wanted to stay.
One other good thing about the portal, there's good things and bad things with everything, but one of the other good things about the portal is that you may want to stay close to home, but you're willing to give it a whirl. So you go a ways away from home, like Cam Carter did, from Louisiana to the middle of Kansas, or some people would say middle of nowhere in the Midwest, to some people on the coast in particular. They say, oh, it's flyover country. And he came here. He had success, no doubt. But then he's like, you know what? I want to be closer to my family. I want to go back home. And it's much easier to make that instead of, oh, in the old days where, oh, you're going to have to sit out a year. Well, I guess I better stick it out. Now you can go ahead and play immediately for the LSU and transfer back and be closer to the home.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the good things is that I can take that chance now and go, you know, fly with my own wings and see what I can find out about myself. And then if it works out, great. And if not, man, you know what? I can probably still come back home and find the place to play. Perhaps that's what happened with Cam Carter. So I think that is one of the good things about the transfer portal. The other thing I read the other day about the portal, there's so many players enter the portal. And everybody just assumes they all find a place. They don't. 73% of those that enter the portal either don't find another place to play or go down.
Yeah.
A level.
Yeah.
Or go something lower than what they had.
Yeah, for sure.
So and when you sit here and go, greener pastures on the other side, the numbers say that only one out of every four actually improve their situation.
Yeah, and there's obviously a lot of examples, but when I'm thinking, like, there's always one example that might come to my mind, and it's Wykeen Gill on the football team for me, right? He was from Atchison. He played at K-State. He ended up at Duquesne after entering the portal,
right?
Like, and that's that's Division I in basketball, and they made the tournament this year. But in football, that's FCS.
That's a major drop down.
Yeah, you're in a real playoff, but you're in a level lower for sure. And so that's always kind of the example that goes into my mind about, hey, you think the pastures are greener on the other side, and whoops,
yeah,
we ended up in FCS here because we thought we were better than we were. And I don't know if that's the case with Viking Gill. That's just an example.
Right. Our focus on K-State athletics today is brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. K-State baseball team ranked 23rd in the country. They had a 10-game winning streak, but that was snapped. They've now lost two in a row. They're 6-3 in Big 12 play, 18-8 overall. They'll be in action against Missouri State in Springfield this afternoon at 4 o'clock. K-State was hosting Texas here recently, and they took the opener of that series 14-6, lost game 2 21-11, and then lost the rubber match to Texas 6-3 over the weekend on Saturday. So they've had a few days off. They'll be at Missouri State this afternoon, then they will be on the road at Central Florida for a 3-game series, and then they'll host Wichita State a week from today at 6 o'clock there at Toynton Family Stadium. But K-State baseball team off to a pretty good start, a little bit rough early, and then really played well, and then top of the Big 12, and then lost the last two to Texas. So, that's how it is. Baseball's a pretty long season. Even in college, it's not as long as the big leagues, of course, but there's your ebbs and your flows. It's a marathon, a sprint, and so you're going to have your ebbs and your flows. You're going to have that you're going to lose 4 out of 5 from time to time. You're going to win 6 out of 7. Now, some teams are really, really good, and they don't lose many games. Don't get me wrong, because it's a shorter season in MLB. But typically, if you're a team in a Power 5, Power 6 conference, in baseball in particular, and it's kind of true of basketball, too, you're going to have your ebbs and your flows. And so, wow, K-State's won 10 in a row. They're going to make the tournament. They lost 3 out of 4. They're not going to make the tournament. It's somewhere in between.
Teams can baseball can't go out and have one dominant pitcher like softball and go on an 80-game or 70, right, whatever game pitch winning streak like Oklahoma did, right? Baseball's not going to be what softball is from that aspect. You're not going to see these teams that are having 0-1-2 losses really going into the World Series. They're going to have a setback here or there. They're going to play a game against a team that is just not even close to as good as them and lose.
Yeah.
Just because that's the way their rotation was set up that day, or they just didn't hit that day.
Right. Absolutely. A few other college basketball notes to get to here. And by the way, K-State in Focus was brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit, Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. The Monday night's Elite Eight matchup between Iowa and LSU was watched by 12.3 million people. It was the most viewed women's college basketball game on record, the most watched college basketball game ever on ESPN platforms. It was a rematch of the national title game a year ago, which held the previous record for most people watching a women's college basketball game. And now a year later, it was succeeded in the Elite Eight, which tells you things are going the right direction. Now, it helps to have star power, like with any sport. And the star power, and it's just like movies. You need stars, right? Star power helps sell movies. Even the movie sucks. You go, you watch it, you got sucked in. Oh, I want to see Tom Cruise in this movie. Wow, Dad was bad in that one. Well, I already got my money, so that's too bad. But eventually people spread the word and say it's a really bad movie. It still could hurt the box office for that particular movie, and they might lose money over the whole thing. But it helps to have a star if you're promoting various things, including sports. And college women's basketball, no question, has a star. That's Caitlin Clark. She's the face. I would say she's the face of all of women's basketball. She's not in WNBA yet, but she's the face of women's basketball.
Yeah, for sure.
And she'll be in WNBA next year. So you had her, but you also had Angel Reese, and she's kind of been portrayed as the villain by some people. And, I felt for her after the season was over, how emotional she got and how her teammates backed her up. And I will say, there we go again with the assuming. Angel Reese didn't play in some games earlier this year, really wasn't released. Why? And people just assumed that she was a problem, a malcontent, that she got her head ballooned after winning a championship, and she was cocky and arrogant and this and that. All these people said all these things. And we still don't really know, as far as I have heard, why she missed some time. But I'll give you my theory. She needed mental health issues.
Yeah.
She had mental health issues or needed a break. And that doesn't need to be anybody's business. But we just immediately assume that she was the problem. And what we don't know is maybe we as society was the problem. And so it was very interesting for her to talk about how this year went and how emotional it was for her and so forth and so on, that winning a national championship actually made things harder for her. And like her teammates said, the crown that she wore this year was very, very heavy. And because, and I don't want to say this is a racist situation, but, you look at it, Caitlin Clark does some dirty things. And she's she taunts.
Yeah,
and
I watch her play when she's playing K-State, and I can't stand her, to be completely honest. Right. When she's playing your team, it's like.
But when Angel Reese does what she did, everybody's like, that's wrong, and they start to vilify her. But Caitlin Clark does some very similar things, or even more things. And she is the chosen one, as you say, although she earned how great she is. She's a great player. There's taking that away, no matter what her character is. And people say she's a great person. People that play with Angel Reese say she's an amazing leader and teammate. But the version that America tends to see is we need a good person and a bad person. We need a villain. We need a hero. And the hero is usually white.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. You go back and look through the history of whatever it is, a hero and a villain. You know, the villain is like some kind of monster, or it might be different colored skin or animal or a hybrid of something. Or I'm not saying that the bad guy in a movie isn't a white guy or a white woman. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is many times a hero, at least over time, is more so it fits a certain profile. And I think that's where we go with this. Like, well, Caitlin Clark in Iowa, their run was ruined because we all jumped on the wagon. Wow, this is awesome. And we love the 35-foot three-pointers and shots from the logo. And then Angel Reese is just a really good post player, which is pretty dang good. She's a great post player. But she's not as flashy, but she's a great player. She just ruined everything for Caitlin Clark in Iowa. LSU won. And then she did the gesture to Caitlin Clark with the hands in front of her face. And then she taunted her and this and that. And they immediately say she's a bad person. And it's like Caitlin Clark's taunted people before that game.
Yeah.
Why doesn't she catch the same grief? It's a good question. You know, why do people catch more grief than others? You know, Tim Tebow caught a ton of grief and he didn't do anything wrong. Peyton Manning caught a lot more grief than Tom Brady. And he was just as good a quarterback as Brady. I still think Peyton Manning as an actual quarterback was better than Tom Brady. But in regards to the greatest of all time argument, I got to factor in the wins, the championships, head to head. And there's no denying that Brady is the GOAT. The all around package, Brady is the GOAT. But if you redrafted and those guys were coming out of college, you redrafted and they're both in their prime, I think a lot of people, even though they knew Brady won a lot of Super Bowls, will still take Peyton Manning. I do believe that.
I held on to Peyton for a long time because of everything that he did as basically a coach on the field and could do so many things and knew so much about the game and just had to go against Tom Brady for a lot of his career and trying to get championships and, you know, not necessarily head-to-head all the time, but in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And I held on to Peyton as long as I could, but there's a point where you're just like, yeah, can't do it anymore.
So it's just interesting how we
there's also a point where Tom Brady becomes the villain, too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. But it is interesting how we profile people. I mean, really, we really do. There's an issue that somebody's been talking about lately, and I think there is some truth to it, and I don't want to get too political, but, you know, identity politics. Identity politics. Like, why are we sitting here and saying that, well, this is the Asian vote, and this is the African-American vote, and this is the senior citizen vote, and this is the Mexican vote, and then how about they're all Americans? Like, Raven Simone came out. She was on The Cosby Show. Remember her? She was Olivia, the little girl. And she's an actress, and I think she does producing, directing, whatever. And she's been a very successful woman. And she said recently, she said, I'm offended when people call me African-American because I was not born in Africa. I've never been to Africa. I was born in the United States. I've always been an American. Why do I have to be called an African-American? I am an American. And she's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And Morgan Freeman said, listen, until we can get away from saying a white man and an African-American, that's the way to beat some of these things.
Yeah.
We're all Americans. So whether we have a different color of our skin, whether we're a woman, a man, we're elderly, we're young, we have disabilities, whether we're from Vietnam, Taiwan, originally in our ancestry, but we actually were born in the United States. You could be from Vietnam or Taiwan in China and Japan. You were born in this country. You've never been to those countries. You were born in this country. By the way, I'm German. I'm from a German heritage. I'm American. I was born in this country. I've never been to Germany. That is the same thing. It's the same thing. It might be the ancestry and lineage goes further back a couple of generations before my family and ancestors came to America from Germany. But the point is, people don't identify me as a German American. Well, but shouldn't I be?
No,
shouldn't I be?
You should be identified as a European American.
Okay,
because we're doing continents here,
okay,
right?
Fine.
Because everything else
true
is based on a continent.
Well, our color.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, like
from
what you're talking about, African American,
right,
or Asian American.
Right. Yeah,
you know, it's like how
right
many if you're over there,
and then when you're white, you just call it by your color.
Yeah,
your skin,
if you're
white.
Other side of the sea, you're
right
being based on a continent,
yeah,
not a country.
Yeah,
and so yeah, we should be called European Americans.
Yes. Right. So there's a thing called identity politics. How about we're just all Americans? Could we at least finally agree on that? And so the reason I say this, you may say, well, where's the show going? What I'm saying is Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are both great basketball players. Why do we care? Why do we care so much about one being one color and the other another color? But you can kind of tie the pieces together of why one's being portrayed as a villain, because it seems like, well, this is, we got to have a good guy and a bad guy, right? But you know what? When Magic Johnson played Larry Bird, I don't remember there being a big villain. One's white, one's black. They had a friendship. They played against each other. Wasn't a villain. Now, there was probably many people that were pulling for Bird and the Celtics, maybe because they didn't want a black man to be successful. There might have been people on the African-American side of things saying, listen, I'm cheering against Bird. I'm cheering for Magic because he's black. That's possible. But we didn't have to make one the villain or not, but even back then. And we didn't have to make a villain out of, you know, I'm trying to think of another example per se. But in this case, it's like women's basketball. We have to make one out to be the bad person. What? Because we think that's going to help ratings? And I think that was the thinking, or maybe the narrative. Maybe
well,
that was
worked.
The
there's no
right
question
that's what
about
I'm saying.
That. Yeah.
Maybe that was the agenda by ESPN to paint it that way, or society. Maybe it just happened to go that way. But I think that one of the big reasons why that was the most watched game of all time is clearly you had star names playing. Two, it was a rematch of the national championship game. But the main thing I think people were watching was to see if Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark would get into it.
Absolutely.
And they
contributed to
it. And
that
wasn't even close. They don't hate each other. They get along great. They've respectfully talked about each other's games. They are in the heat of competition. And Angel Reese did the whole flash the hand in front thing. And Caitlin Clark did it the previous game to people. And Caitlin Clark got a pass. And Angel Reese was like, what a horrible prima donna, blah, 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 da, 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 all about her, and so forth and so on. And then she speaks her mind. And so people start going, oh, I don't like that either. So she's the villain. So I agree with you that I think that helped boost the ratings by having a bad woman versus a good woman. And I say that tongue in cheek because Angel Reese is not a bad woman, but that's how people wanted to paint it. But why is the black woman the bad woman?
I don't.
You could go a whole route
like
there.
You could go a different route there, and I don't necessarily think that that's always the case.
I'm not saying it's always the case. In this case, I think
it was in this case.
That is part of it.
Yeah, I think this would be a case by case basis on whether the black person is the villain in this case or that case, because I mean, like you said, Tom Brady turned into a villain, you know, and Patrick Mahomes is the other side of that, and he has basically now turned into a villain because
he was the hero.
Tired.
Now,
yeah, it's like it's just like the quote in The Dark Knight, right? Either die a hero, or you live long enough, become the villain,
that's
right?
True.
And so that's kind of the way it works in sports. If you win and you have success, this is a different case because, well, actually, it's not, because Angel Reese won and Caitlin Clark didn't last year, right?
Yeah.
And so it was just a quicker progression of you're the villain now because you were the one that acted out when you won the championship because you won the championship. Nobody knows what Caitlin Clark would have done in that situation because she didn't win the championship.
Right.
And so
she spoke her mind. She was outspoken.
When you add to that, this is no different than, like, I'm sitting here watching the Super Bowl and a trailer plays during the Super Bowl for a movie that's coming out, right? Why do you do that? You want people to come see your movie, so you place it in the prime time when people are watching.
Absolutely.
And this is no different. Why do you think ESPN personalities, and I don't watch the shows, but you see the clips all over social media.
Can't avoid it.
Why do you think they're always talking about Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark? Because they know if they play, that's on their station coming up.
Yes.
And we should pump the you-know-what out of this.
Yeah.
and get all the ratings that we can.
Yes.
It's no different than promoting a movie or a CD really or an album or
a TV show. It's all
going
entertainment.
On the Tonight Show
sports
with Jimmy
is entertainment.
Fallon.
It's all entertainment.
This is, and that's what people don't understand enough about sports.
Yes.
Is we can fit a narrative and fix a narrative a lot of ways in sports without saying the whole thing's fixed,
yes.
too, right?
Right?
Without saying there's a script
right.
and all this stuff. There are a lot of ways to get ratings without doing all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I mean, you're not fixing ratings for a movie. You figure out where you need to place this ad,
right?
Where you need to put this trailer, where you need to promote this show on Hot Ones, or if you want to do it on mm-hmm. the Tonight Show or Jimmy Kimmel,
right.
wherever you're doing it. This is no different. You're promoting this on your platform of shows that you argue about senseless stuff,
right?
But there's a reason they're doing it.
You make up narratives to push an agenda.
Yes.
And that's no different than sports, politics, or
people
society.
People still eat that up, whether it's entertainment, whether, you know, TMZ, why you people are watching all that stuff, and they're reading tabloids and all this. It's the same thing. It's just a different way of doing it.
Listen, we see this. We're seeing this now locally, obviously.
Yeah.
People know about a certain issue. We also know it happens regionally, and it happens nationally and worldwide. I mean, it's across the board. And sports is not excluded from that
yeah.
conversation.
The machine
sure.
obviously helped them get the best rated women's basketball game.
No doubt that rivalry and that no doubt about
and
it.
And it's not even a real rivalry.
No, it's not.
LSU and Iowa.
It's the second time they played in 2 years, so it's a rivalry, I guess. And then Caitlin Clark leaves and goes NBA, WNBA.
Yeah, I mean, this is the last time they're ever going to play
each other. They might.
At the college level.
Yeah, they might not play again.
Might play against each other in WNBA, but then nobody's going to be talking about that there.
Well, WNBA is going to promote it.
They'll bring it up, but it's not going to get the same type of visceral reaction from a lot of people.
Not the visceral part, but I think it'll help people tune into a WNBA game.
For sure, no doubt. And those players are going to advance that league. There's no question.
I totally agree with you. Okay, this is really awesome. Gene Cady, of course, got his start coaching Beloit High School basketball. He's 87 years young now. We've had him on our show years ago. There's a bench that's outside Beloit High School with his name on it. And then, of course, we know what he did. He's a National College Basketball Hall of Famer, Naismith Hall of Fame coach. But he never made it to the Final Four as a coach. He was the only coach that had a winning record over Bobby Knight head-to-head in regards to having some longevity. Not, you know, maybe there was a coach to beat Bobby Knight one time when he played him. But we're talking about, you know, they played each other all the time, Purdue. Matt Painter is head coach of Purdue. He played for Gene Cady. There's a really great story on CBSSports.com about Matt Painter and how he loved Indiana and Bobby Knight, and he didn't like Purdue at all. And he went on visits, and his dad convinced him to go to Purdue because he said Gene Cady was the only guy being honest with him and was being tough love and saying, hey, you're going to learn how to do this, this, and this. Now, fast forward, Matt Painter is taking Purdue to the Final Four for the first time since 1980. Gene Cady had some great teams. They made the Elite Eight multiple times, never made it to the Final Four. Gene Cady never, he was a player. He was on some great teams. He never made it to the Final Four. Now he's 87 years young. After the game when Purdue won and finally got to the Final Four after beating Tennessee, Zach Edey cut the net, his piece of the net, cut it in half, turned and handed it to Gene Cady. Gene Cady, 87 years young, able to stand on his own, which is great. He's on the floor, and he was tickled to death like a little boy.
Yeah.
And he got the net, and he hung it, he raised it up in triumph. And Zach Edey said after the game, he was asked, you know, why did you do that? And he said, because we respect what came before us, and Mr. Cady built this. He's the one that built this. And that's ultimate respect. People tend to forget where things came from. Some people get it. Some people don't. You know, a lot of the young NBA players nowadays, I don't think understand that without Jordan, Bird, and Magic, and Dr. J, you wouldn't have nothing today. And then some do understand it, and they do get it. And you know, some of these NFL players get paid so well. That's because, you know, how about Dick Butkus and these guys that gave up their bodies and didn't have great pensions or health funds or whatever the case may be, but they helped set the tone for the league, and now people get taken care of a little bit better, obviously, in the National Football League and so forth and so on. But Zach Edey, the star, 7'4" center, he just said, hey, man, he's the guy that built this. And Matt Painter now, who played for Gene Cady, was an assistant coach for Gene Cady, he says, you know, it's so great that now I can say Gene Cady's going to the Final Four. How cool is that?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
It's not I mean, I don't want to run down a generation, but it seems like there's not a lot of people that kind of have the grasp on that like Zach Edey does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Maybe there is. Maybe there's a lot of other guys that are going to do the same thing that he would do, but it doesn't seem that way based on – well, I mean, and why would you? I mean, if you can leave a school – every year and enter the portal, right? Like, you don't probably go in depth on what that program means as much as, you know, a guy like Zach Edey that's been there for a while too. He's probably had it ingrained in him because he's been there long enough to understand it. And so I do think that, and I think that, you know, I'm going to sound like the old guy, just like every generation, right? Like, where the younger guys don't respect something, right? Because this has been happening since the beginning of time when new generations come across, right? Oh, yeah. So I'm not trying to say bad things about this generation. I'm just saying that that's a story that I don't know you're seeing a lot of places, right?
History didn't begin when you were born.
Yeah.
That's what I've always used. You know, it's interesting with Matt Painter, there's all kinds of ties here. We talked about the tie with, of course, Gene Cady and Beloit High School. But after Painter graduated from Purdue, he was had some small college assistant gigs. Then Bruce Weber, former K-State coach, and of course was assistant on Gene Cady's staff back in the day. Bruce Weber landed the Southern Illinois job with the Salukis. He hired Painter onto his staff. Then when Bruce Weber took the Illinois job, okay, remember that when Bill Self left for Kansas, there's another tie. Bruce Weber took the Illinois job. That left the Southern Illinois gig to Matt Painter, which I forgot about.
Yeah,
he went 25-5, Matt Painter with Southern Illinois, reached the NCAA tournament. And then Gene Cady said, hey, come and be an assistant for me, probably with the idea that you're going to be my successor.
Coach in waiting.
Matt Painter spent one season as Katie's top assistant, and then the head coaching job was Matt Painter's. And now Matt Painter is taking Purdue to the Final Four. Matt Painter said, and I quote, when you're 18 years old and you get recruited by somebody, you don't think 15 years later you're going to be the head coach and take his place, right? But that's what happened with him. At the age of 33, Matt Painter, pretty young, took over the Purdue program. And now another 19 years later, guess what? He and Zach Edey recognize that Gene Cady built this program, and they're all celebrating a trip to the Final Four. That's pretty doggone cool.
And the thing that I like to see about that, or that's interesting about that, I don't know if you like to see it because everybody's going to go out about things a different way, but how many schools would have given up on Matt Painter by now? You know, like,
oh, a lot.
A
lot.
Because he's not made the Final Four. He's had all these good teams, but can't get to the Final Four. And so, you know, that's a long time to trust in a guy and say, hey, come back every year, when you're not hitting the pinnacle. But, you know, they did it with Gene Cady too, right? All the years that he was there, never made the Final Four. So it's like they have a track record of, I guess, being consistent and letting their coaches coach and let it play out. You know, some programs and universities aren't going to allow that to happen.
Well, it reminds me of the old story. Mike Krzyzewski really struggled his first 2 years in Duke, and if he was in today's society, he would have been king.
Yeah,
and they stuck with him, and boy, that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it was okay.
And you know, Gene Cady got to experience Final Four with Bruce Weber going to Illinois, and made it to the national championship game and lost to North Carolina and Roy Williams. And I'm sure that was cool and all, but it's not the same as Purdue. And so now Gene Cady's going to experience that. I'm happy for him. You know, we talked about the Royals a little bit ago earlier. Through one trip through the rotation, Reagan, Singer, Lugo, Waka, and Marsh, 33 innings pitched, 15 hits, 33 Ks, only 7 walks. Matt Cochero said in spring training, we're going to throw way more strikes.
Yeah.
ERA 1.74. That's a heck of a first turn through the newly revamped rotation.
Yeah.
Looks pretty good so far.
Keep consistent.
Now just get the offense going more consistently. Hopefully the bullpen comes around. The Royals will be fine. The Chiefs have signed or have reached an agreement, and we predicted this on our show. They're going to bring back running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire on a one-year deal. He was the late first at the end of the first round in the 2020 draft. Over four seasons, he's rushed for 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns. His biggest year is his rookie year, ran for 803. He's been injury-prone a little bit since then. Isaiah Pacheco is now the main featured back, and Helaire is kind of a third-down back or fills in here and there, although McKinnon really was a third-down back. Helaire was kind of insurance this year. So, and J.K. Dobbins came in for a visit. He tore his ACL again, I think, last year, if I remember, ruptured his Achilles. And when he's healthy, he's a good running back, played for the Ravens. So we'll see if the Chiefs sign J.K. Dobbins. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, as we projected, he is signing and going to be back with the Chiefs. We also said Mecole Hardman will probably be back with the Chiefs, and I stand by that, even though he hasn't yet.
Yeah.
I think he will, too. Now for the crescendo, ladies and gentlemen, this is huge. We could have started the show off, but we're not as close to Kansas City, obviously, out here in north central Kansas. So there's other things I wanted to get to on the show today, but I wanted to save this for the end, because if you are a Kansas City Chiefs fan, if you're a Kansas City Royals fan, you really have to wonder what's going to happen now. If you don't know what's going on, Jackson County voters in Kansas City went to the polls yesterday to vote on question one, which was a 40-year sales tax plan. 40-year sales tax plan that would have helped pay for construction of a Royals ballpark immediately south of the downtown freeway loop and the East Crossroads, and a major renovation of Arrowhead Stadium for the Chiefs. I thought it would be a tight vote based on what I had heard. It was not. 58% voted no. 42% yes. Ladies and gentlemen, in today's polls and politics, that is a landslide. That is a rout. John Sherman, majority owner of the Royals, on the losing vote.
We won a baseball game tonight, but we didn't win this. You know, we respect the democratic process. We respect the voters of Jackson County and the results of the election today. We're deeply disappointed, as we are steadfast in our belief that Jackson County is far better off with the Chiefs and the Royals. This is a belief that I hold both professionally and personally, as someone whose roots run deep in this town, as someone who has been a dedicated fan, a season ticket holder for both of these teams, and now leading a remarkable ownership group assembled for its ties to Kansas City. We thank all those who worked on this election for their time and commitment. They are here in this room and well beyond. They know who they are. We will take some time to reflect on and process the outcome and find a path forward that works for the Royals and our fans. Thank you.
The last part, the path forward, that's the big question mark now. Let's give you a little bit of background if you don't know what's going on. Kauffman Stadium, where the Royals reside, is the sixth oldest active Major League Baseball stadium. Let that sink in. It's the sixth oldest stadium in Major League Baseball. Part of the vote was funding for building a downtown stadium. On the Chiefs' side of things, they plan on staying out there, but renovating. But when the renovation's $800 million, I'm sitting here going, why not blow the thing up and build it new for, you know, $1.5 billion or whatever?
Yeah,
I don't know.
And I think renovations are a lot like what we've talked about with the downtown thing. There's a lot of stuff involved in that, not just the stadium, right? Because I don't know if you've seen the renderings or not, but there's like a whole...
For Arrowhead?
Yeah, there's a whole deal out there.
Right.
It's not just a stadium renovation.
But the Chiefs unveiled plans for an $800 million renovation at Arrowhead that would upgrade almost everything. Not only would parking and tailgating improve, but the team was also planning to add new video boards, better luxury amenities, including new club areas in the end zone, which I'm sitting there going, wow, just more for the rich. What about the common?
Where are we going, right?
What about the common fan? I don't think they care about the common fan. The Chiefs are planning to foot $300 million of the renovation bill, but the rest of the money was expected to come from the extension of the 3/8 cent sales tax that just got voted down last night. The Chiefs had said they would sign a 25-year lease at Arrowhead if the tax extension had been approved and people voted for this last night, but that seems to be off the table for now. Chiefs Chairman and CEO Clark Hunt said in late February that the team definitely would not be signing a new lease if the tax wasn't extended. The sales tax is currently in place through 2031. Tuesday's vote was asking the people of Jackson County to extend the tax through 2064. So, are the Chiefs and Royals in danger of leaving right away? No. The Chiefs and the Royals have leases through 2031. So the Chiefs and the Royals will stay in Kansas City, Missouri for 7 years. With the ballot measure failing, the future of the Chiefs is up in the air. Team President Mark Donovan said in mid-March that relocation would be on the table if the sales tax got voted down. Prior to the vote, the Royals and the Chiefs did say they would explore all options if the tax failed. Both teams will now work on the next steps towards a new stadium or renovations. So there's two lines of thinking here, and it's very severe one way or the other. One line of thinking is, oh my God, they're going to move the teams, and we've got to give them what they want. And that's a lot of those people voted yes last night. The other line of thinking is, I already pay enough in taxes. We've supported these teams. The prices for parking go up all the time. The prices on a hot dog go up all the time. The ticket prices go up to where it's almost pricing me out of things. And now you want me to pay more in taxes to refurbish Arrowhead, build a brand new stadium that's away from where it is that I like to go and tailgate and park. And I think it's time to put our foot down and say, listen, you're not going to leave. This is all a bluff. This is all leverage, and you're preying on the fear of people because they may leave. Now, I think that's a dangerous assumption to make because there are entities, there are locations in this country that would love to grab the Chiefs or the Royals. Salt Lake City would be one right off the bat that pops in my head. They've got a $3.5 million situation that they could go try to get somebody from what I read the other day. So there are, you know, the A's didn't work out anything, although the owners kind of didn't want to stay in Oakland anyway, but they knew Vegas was an option. So as long as the Royals and Chiefs know there is another option, then they are going to consider taking your teams and moving them. Now, for me personally, and I think for you as well, we are Kansans. We have always been in Kansas, all right? If the Royals and Chiefs move out by the Speedway, I don't care. Yeah. Fine with me.
Yeah.
Because for me, as a Chiefs and Royals fan, I just want them to be close enough where I can go watch them. Those are my teams. If they move to Salt Lake City and they rebranded, now I don't know what I do, right? But if they're still the Kansas City Chiefs, and they technically are in Kansas City, Kansas, but on the Kansas side, if Jackson County doesn't want them, or Jackson County doesn't want to pay the freight, and the state of Kansas does, who am I to say no? I'd rather they move to the Kansas side than go to Salt Lake City or somewhere else. So for me, you know, if I'm a person that has a business nearby the stadiums, or I benefit from the Royals and the Chiefs being in Jackson County or being in Missouri, then yeah, I'm a little bit worried about what just happened last night. There's no question about that, but I'm not. If you're always been a Missourian and you hate Kansas and your border war and all this other stuff, you're like, God dang it. I don't want them to go to Kansas. That's just sick. These are Missouri teams, okay? And then there are some people I know that like, yeah, I'm Missourians, but I voted no on this thing, but if they move it to Kansas, I'm still going to go across state lines and cheer them on, and if I can afford it. So it really doesn't change anything for me. It's just a different direction I got to travel. And that's for me. That's how I feel. Yeah, I hear all these people say, well, Kauffman Stadium is such a beautiful stadium, and Arrowhead. Listen, things change, man. You've got to renovate. You got to update. You got to find money to renovate and update, or you got to tear down and build new. That's eventually what happens. Are you driving the same car? When you're 75 years old, do you have a 70-year-old car?
No.
No, you upgrade. You get something different. Something breaks down. You get nickel and dime to death. Eventually, you make a change, right? You might, you know, you upgrade in a house, or you, instead of renting, you get a house, or you do this, or you do that. What's interesting about this whole thing to me last night is Laura Kelly in the state of Kansas is sitting here going, licking their chops. And the state of Kansas right now, and I will pretty much assure you this, I have no information to back it up, but I can pretty much assure you, I'm not assuming, I'm pretty much assuring you that there are people right now and already last night, and well before the vote even took place last night, from Kansas saying, if this goes no and it doesn't go your way, let's work something out here in Kansas so we can keep them in the Midwest. And what's really interesting here is a reminder. When Kansas passed the bill to legalize sports betting, they set aside 80% of the revenue to attract professional sports teams to Kansas. There is no professional sports team in Kansas, okay?
Except not in the big four,
right. Sporting KC would be
out at Legends.
Right.
So.
Okay. So think about this. Where does the money go when they legalize sports betting? The first $750,000 in sports bets goes to the White Collar Crime Fund. After that, 2% goes to the Problem Gambling Addictions Grant Fund. 80%. Let me repeat this. 80% of the money that comes from legalized sports betting in Kansas goes into a fund to attract professional sports teams to Kansas. The remaining 18% goes to the state general fund. 80% of every dollar that you spend on legalized sports betting in the state of Kansas goes into a fund that will draw interest and whatever else to try to buy the Chiefs and the Royals to come to Kansas. And I think it's smart. I think it's very smart. And what? Think about this for a second. If you're a Missourian that hates the idea, but you've come to Kansas, because Missouri doesn't have legalized sports betting. So if you're a person that loves to sports bet legally, and you've come over to the casino on the Kansas side, and you've legalized sports bet, or you've legally bet sports in the state of Kansas, but you're a Missourian, you didn't even know, probably, that 80% of your money is going towards Kansas to help take away the teams in your very state and backyard. And somebody, I saw this too the other day. It was like there was some kind of truce war between Kansas and Missouri. They kind of joked about. But Laura Kelly even quoted back in 2022, said that does not include the Royals or the Chiefs. They've already been thinking about this for a very long time. A very, very long time. And so I think it's great for Kansas if they get them. It's not good for Missouri. It could be bad for Jackson County. It could be good because they don't have to pay any more taxes and fund these stadiums and whatever. But what's ultimately the worst thing and the worst case scenario for Chiefs fans and Royals fans and for the state of Kansas and the state of Missouri, the ultimate worst scenario is somewhere else.
Yeah.
Somewhere else. So the Chiefs and Royals, I guarantee, have been talking to places across the country. They've been talking to the state of Kansas. And I do not believe this is a bluff at all. I think the people that say, well, they're just doing that, but they really wouldn't leave or they wouldn't relocate. They've been here all these years. You really are clueless, I think, when you say those things out of your mouth. Because look around and look at the history of sports. Many teams have relocated. Many. A lot of them even last 5 to 10 years. All you got to do is look down to the south here. OKC Thunder were the Seattle Supersonics.
Yeah.
They didn't get what they wanted. They relocated. They've done pretty good, right?
Yeah, the Kings used to live in Kansas City.
That's right. And they're doing pretty good in Sacramento. So this happens a lot. There are professional franchises that do pick up and move. In the middle of the night, Art Modell did, and the Browns moved, or they went from what, Baltimore? The
Colts went from Baltimore to Indianapolis.
To Indianapolis, yeah. So this happens. And so while you may believe it's a bluff, you're making a pretty gigantic assumption it is. And when it isn't, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You in trouble. And I take Mark Donovan's words very seriously. I do think there's a chance there's a bluff element in there. Don't get me wrong. But what Mark Donovan is doing, as much as I don't like some of these people that are in charge of things, but it is a cutthroat business. They're going to do what's best for the Chiefs. They ain't going to, you know, when they sit here and tell you, we're going to do what's best for our fans, bullcrap. They're doing what's best for their organization. Okay? And do you notice in the comments, John Sherman has said, and Mark Donovan, president of the Chiefs, they have said, we're going to do what's best for the organization and the fans. They didn't say what they'll do best for Kansas City. Do you notice they left that out?
Uh-huh.
I think that's very telling, which means all options on the table, which they've been forthright and transparent. They said, listen, if this doesn't go through, it doesn't get voted yes, which it didn't, then we respect the process. We're going to explore all of our options. Why wouldn't you?
Well,
why
yeah,
wouldn't
have
you?
To, yeah.
That's business. Yeah. Just like if you have a job and you have all kinds of opportunities out there, it doesn't hurt to listen. It doesn't mean you're going to leave. You just have options that you explore. That's all the Chiefs are going to do, and that's what the Royals are going to do. I still think they're going to be, I don't know about Kansas City now, but I do think that there's a good chance they can come to the Kansas side, especially after what happened last night.
There's things that root around in my mind, like just about this, and I've read a couple comments about it, but otherwise it's just kind of gut feeling type stuff for me. I definitely think if you're worried about one or the other leaving, you're more worried about the Royals leaving because they wanted a whole new stadium, right? Like they wanted everything.
But people are going to feel more worried about the Chiefs because they are the cat's meow Super Bowl champs.
But here, I'm going to come on the other side of that. I'm worried more about the Royals because what I think about this is I think the Royals got involved with the Chiefs on this deal to try to win this vote.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think they attached to the hip of the team that is, like you said, the cat's meow. That's the back-to-back NFL champions.
Which is smart.
Attached to that hip because Kansas City loves that hip because they're winning right now.
Right.
The Royals are not winning right now.
No.
And so they needed something to leverage. You know, Bobby Witt Jr.'s contract was something that they talked about that could be part of that could leverage a little bit. You leverage by getting with the Chiefs and getting them to be a part of this. I don't think that the Chiefs needed all of this private, their public funding, right?
I
think the Chiefs can put together a plan that they actually pay more and still get a sales tax from the public.
I agree.
I think that was because everybody's like, oh, the Royals are putting more than the Chiefs in because the Chiefs don't need this right now.
Right.
They have enough success that I think they feel like they can go as their own entity and do something different than from what the Royals are doing. And they were throwing the Royals a bone here,
yeah.
is what I think in
I
my
think
mind.
So.
That's just a gut thing, and I don't know if that's real.
Right.
I'm just thinking that.
Yeah.
The other thing about if you're worried about the team leaving is the roots of ownership with the Royals is so deep in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody that owns that team is from Kansas City. I mean, John Sherman's the majority owner. I get it. So he's going to have to talk his Kansas City ownership group into leaving town. I don't think they'll all leave town with him,
mm-hmm.
but there is a concern that they would sell their shares
yep.
and leave town because he's not devoted to what they originally
right.
planned
mm-hmm.
and what they bought into this franchise
right.
to when David Glass sold it. So, you know, your Eric Stonestreets, your Jason Sudeikis, your Patrick Mahomes, who's playing with the Chiefs right now, all those guys that are tied to Kansas City that have part ownership of this team are obviously working really, really hard to keep that in Kansas City. I'll promise you that. But if John Sherman, the majority owner, says we're leaving, that's why he's the majority owner, right? And so he's going to have more of a say in that. And so there's a lot going on there. I think there's opportunities still if they go looking where they were in Clay County or in Kansas or whatever the Royals were trying to do, right?
There's yeah, remember, it's a Jackson County vote.
Yeah, that's there's still was. Options that they have
yeah.
thought about that are that right. could be on the table, and Clay County might be like, yeah, move out here. Let's do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they could both move north of the river, and they go
yeah.
north. They don't have to go to Kansas. Kansas would be intriguing to me, though. There's no doubt.
And, oh, for
and,
sure.
And I will tell you this. If you're sitting on farmland west of the Speedway and anything to the north, you held out, it may eventually
yeah.
really, really pay off for you.
Yeah.
It's possible. But Kansas has positioned themselves to make a run at trying to get the Chiefs and Royals. And what happened last night helps Kansas's chances. Doesn't, like you just said, there's lots of options to consider. Maybe completely relocating to another city, going to different places, parts north of Kansas City. Maybe there's even an option to go east of Independence. Who knows?
Yeah.
But there are options for the Chiefs and the Royals. And once again, they're under lease till 2031. So this is not something that you need to lose sleep about tonight. And go, oh my God, I'm losing Chiefs and Royals. No, you're still gonna have them for a while. That's for sure. At least as far as I know, because you got your leases and everything else. But so you're looking at a 7-year window here. So something's probably got to be figured out within the next couple of years, because it takes time to build things and this and set everything up notion, especially if you're going to move to a different state. I'm sure there's lots of legalities and things to work out. And then, of course, acquiring the land, how you're going to format it, architecture, this, and engineering. Same thing if you go north or wherever else. But this is going to be an interesting process to watch. And you're locked into a lease till 2031, so you at least got that going for you. So you have time, and you could sit here and say, well, we don't have to get to this right away. But there still has to be a sense of urgency, because it takes a while to do these things.
Yeah, and I was not surprised that they voted no.
I wasn't like, surprised they voted no, but weren't you surprised
margin,
it was almost 60-40?
The margin for sure was not what I expected.
Yeah,
but I also... You know, this whole thing, John Sherman rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
He does.
And he came out real hard and strong on this thing about it's time to leave Kauffman Stadium.
He did.
Like, when he came out with that cut and just literally just put it point blank, it's time to leave the K. And that rubbed a lot of people the way he did that. And I guarantee you, a losing product, the way he did that, the amount of money it's going to take to keep them in Jackson County and doing all the other stuff with the Chiefs involved with it too, it was like, no, I'm not doing this. Like, yeah. I don't like the way he went about it. And that, how many votes go like that, right? Like, where you think it probably could go your way, and then somebody comes in here and goes too strong.
Right.
And I think there's been some votes in this state where
yeah.
where somebody came in here and went too strong
yeah.
and wanted too much and spent too much
yeah.
and tried to get a message out that turned some of their own people
yes.
against them.
Yes. No, I agree. And you appreciate bluntness, which I think John Sherman was. And I tend to agree he's right, but his tactfulness,
his
tactfulness in it.
You respect his honesty.
Yeah, right, but it still doesn't mean that... why can't you just fix up what you got? We got a pretty decent deal.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but the wave of the future, you need to get outside your bubble and see what's happening in other cities, people.
Yeah.
And he knows because he was in Cleveland. He saw what happened when they built a park downtown, this and that. So it's going to be very intriguing to see where things go moving forward, no question. Big news in the National Football League, this breaking news. Hey, we caught it before we're off the air. The Bills are finalizing a trade to send four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans.
Oh.
Okay, so we've talked about the biggest threat to the Chiefs, the Bengals. That's number one. I still believe that. And the one I've been pumping really hard, and Dusty tends to agree with me, I've been pumping that the Texans are the biggest threat to the Chiefs next to the Bengals. Not the Bills, not the Ravens, not the Eagles, not the 49ers. The biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs, and now you add in Diggs. C.J. Stroud, they got young defense, they got a young coach. The Texans, to me, are moving up the ladder. They're already, I think, the second biggest threat to the Chiefs, but perhaps they very soon, or maybe already are, the biggest threat. Now, I know they haven't played each other in the playoffs, blah, 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 but this up-and-coming franchise organization has turned things around very quickly. And what happens? How do you turn yourself around very quickly? You get your franchise quarterback, or you get a Hall of Fame coach, and then you get your franchise quarterback. That's what happened with the Chiefs, yeah. Right? That's what the Texans did. They got they blew everything up. Got lucky that Lovie Smith tried to win a game so they could get the second pick and took C.J. Stroud instead of Bryce Young, and now they're going to have Stephon Diggs. Now, maybe he'll be a malcontent and a problem, and this won't work for the Texans because he does like to want the, he wants the ball a lot. But and maybe the Bills are better addition by subtraction. But no doubt
yeah,
on
the Bill, I think the Bills had to get rid of him just the way everything
right.
was going.
But based on like, talent on the field, based on production on the field, the Bills just got worse today.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The Texans got a lot better.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
If you're a Chiefs fan and you're not worrying about the stadium thing, here's another thing to worry about. Although I wouldn't worry about a lot, but I'd still be like, yeah. Ooh, I can't be worrying about Josh Allen anymore. I need to stop worrying about Lamar Jackson, even though I should never worry about that anyway. I don't need to worry about Brock Purdy and the Niners or Jalen Hurts and the Eagles. And I don't need to worry about this or that. The team that you might have to worry about, and please stop. Don't worry about the Chargers. That's the thing. You can do that every year. The team you really need to be focusing on if you're a Chiefs fan, watching what they're doing, is the organization I think that's doing it right from the and blew it up, started from scratch, molding it the way they want, and what they did last year was pretty impressive. It's the Houston Texans that I think is and will be the biggest threat to the Chiefs the next 5 years.
Well, we hope for that sophomore slump for CJ.
That's right.
For sure.
That's right. Or just beat him.
Well, beat him.
We play him, we just beat him. We don't care if he has a slump or not. Bring him on. Let him come to Arrowhead. Hell, we'll go to Houston and win. We can win anywhere. We can go to Africa, as Michael Beasley said. We can win anywhere. If I have Patrick Mahomes, my quarterback, I can win in an ice storm. I can win on top of a mountain, in a valley, in a river, underwater. I don't care. I have 15.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.